Let's chant the prayer verse. Should we chant together?
Yes,
good.
Hmm?
We can try. Let's see how we do. Yeah. Om Naunavyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam Nivanam Varshishtante Vasadvarshiganairavritam Brahmanishtai Acharyendram Karakalita Chinmudramanandamurtim Swatmaramam Mudita Vadanam Dakshinamurtinide. Now repeat after me for the start the second verse. The first verse, this is the prayer verse, so I'll do that every time. I'll do verse one. Repeat after me. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam.
Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam.
Nijantargatam.
Nijantargatam.
Pashyan atmani mayaya bahirivud bhutam yata nidraya.
Pashyan atmani mayaya bahirivud bhutam yata nidraya.
Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye.
Yasakshat kurute prabodha samaye.
Swatmanamevadvayam Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye
Tasmai Shri Guru Murtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshina Murtaye.
Let's break the sandhi. Vishwam. Just follow along in your Sanskrit or diacriticals or transliteration. Vishwam darpana drishya. Sorry. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijantargatam. Pashyan atmani mayaya bahihi eva udbhutam yata nidraya yaha sakshat kurute prabodha samaye swatmanam eva advayam tasmai shri gurumurtaye namaha idam Dakshina Murtaye. Let's just go through and see the translation word by word, and then we'll compound by compound, and then we'll put it together, okay? These top line are all in accusative singulars. So Vishwam means the universe. Everything that is perceived, everything that can be objectified is the Vishwa, the universe. Vishwam. Darpana means a mirror. Darpana is a mirror. Okay. Drishyamana is a present participle in the Atmanepada, present participle. It means being seen. It's a passive Atmanepada, present participle. Being seen. So, a mirror, then being seen. Nagara means a city, or a town is a nagara. Nagari tulyam, I put the tulyam on the end, elongate, nagari tulyam, means like a city. Like a city, being seen, drishyamana, in a mirror. The universe is like a city, tulyam-like, nagari tulyam is like a city, which is drishyamana, being seen, like a city being seen in a mirror. And that universe, which is like is likened to a city being seen in a mirror, is nija antaragatam, is actually inside of me, of myself. Nija means the self. So nija antara means inside. Antaragatam means it's abiding inside of me. this city, this universe, is like a mirror, is like a city being reflected in a mirror, which is actually in abiding inside of me, inside of myself. Pashyan means seeing that is a present participle, pashyan. Atmani, in the self. Mayaya, due to maya, okay? Bahihi eva, as though outside, right? Udbhutam, manifest, or presenting itself, is udbhutam. Yata, just as, nidraya, by sleep. Okay, so let's just take these two lines and see what it's saying here. You know, just as in sleep means dream in this case, just as in sleep, when the dream comes, right, the dream becomes manifest, in reality, the whole dream is simply existing in myself, in that I am what we call the adhishtana of the dream. The adhishtana means what is actually there, the very platform, the very basis of the dream. But this word adhishtana, as we use it in the Vedanta, it's a technical term. The adhishtana is what is actually there for anything that is superimposed upon it. What is superimposed, or what appears, what is an appearance, that appearance we call mithya, technically. Mithya means it is totally dependent on something else for its being. So, for instance, the snake which appears on the rope, the snake is mithya, and because it's mithya, it must have an adhishtana. Nothing can be mithya, you know, be totally dependent for its being on something else without that something else being there. So the adhishtana is always what is actually there. The mithya, what is mithya, is what depends on it for its being, and that means it has no being of its own. For instance, in the rope snake analogy, it is the bends of the rope, the diameter of the rope, the length of the rope, the ropeness of the rope, the actual rope, which is 100% the adhishtana of the snake. If I were to take that rope away, there would be, the snake goes. There's no dependence. The snake has absolutely no being or no reality apart from the rope. And so this word, the word we use for that, which is actually there, and which the snake depends on, is the adhishtana. And for there to be an adhishtana, whatever is depending on it is what we call mithya, means it has no being of its own. And so another example we use is the clay pot, where the pot form, has for its adhishtana the clay. It's a little different type of example, but it's the same relationship. The clay is the adhishtana because the clay is what is actually there. The pot form is mithya. Mithya means it has zero being of its own. In fact, you can say, well, really, there's only clay there. You could say, really, there's only clay there, but we're experiencing the pot. Even though there's no pot, it's only clay, yet we experience the pot. But in terms of substance, what is actually there, it's only clay. It's the same with the rope snake. We're experiencing the snake, but really there is only rope there. The only thingness, the substance, the being there is only the rope. You can't go grab the snake, you know? You can't pick up the snake. You can't peel the snake off the rope. The snake has no being of its own. That's what we mean by mithya, okay? Now, that being the case, if you understand this satyam is what it means, the truth, what is actually there. The truth is the adhishtana. Mithya is what is appearing. The adhishtana is as though appearing as that, but it has no being of its own. Right? Now the question is here, between, for instance, the clay and the pot, is there clay and a pot? It means, are there two things there, a clay and a pot? Or are there two things there, the rope and the snake? You'd say no. There's only one thing there, but we acknowledge that we're experiencing the other. We're experiencing the pot, for instance, but not apart from the clay. The pot that we're experiencing has no being. Only the clay has the being. See what I mean? But we experience the pot. It's not like in Sanskrit we'll use these examples like a city in the sky or the son of a barren woman. These are the three stock examples. There's no city in the sky. You know, we might see clouds that are looking like a city in the sky, but there's no city in the sky. It's simply not there, you know. A son of a barren woman in those days, you know, we couldn't do any of these magic things that we do now. And so there is no such thing as a son of a barren woman because that woman is not able to give birth to a son. So there is no son of a barren woman. It is non-existent. So we're not experiencing. I can't say, oh, meet my friend. He's the son of a barren woman. Yeah. That friend is not there. The friend might be there, but he's not the son of a barren woman. That doesn't exist. Or in the third example, they use the horns of a rabbit. Rabbits don't have horns. So one of my students sent me a picture of a rabbit with a horn. In those days, rabbits don't have horns, so you can't have the experience. That's what we call tucham, absolute non-existence. It is not there. We can't say that about this universe. We can't say that about the snake. We can't say that about the pot. We experience it. But upon analysis, there's no being there. The being, the substance that is it enjoys is there, but it is totally independent and free of the pot or the snake. The snake, we can have all kinds of fear of the snake and describe it and everything. From the standpoint of rope, there is no snake. Right? From the standpoint of the clay, there is no pot. Even though we're experiencing the pot, really, we're only experiencing the clay. See what I mean? So that's different than saying absolute non-existence. We experience this world. That doesn't make it real. It means we're having the experience of the world. We're experiencing the mind and our thoughts and our emotions. But that doesn't make it real in terms of its being. If it did, if just the experience of something made it real, then there would be no such thing as Advaita, as non-duality. You know, non-duality means there is no second thing. There is no clay and pot. There's no rope and snake. Even though the experience of pot and snake are there, it has no being apart from the substance. Like that, I have to be able to see and understand there is no universe. There is no Vishwa. There is no universe apart from me as the Adhishtana. So the whole vision of Advaita Vedanta is that there is only one without a second here. There is no second thing. Anything that you think to be a second thing, we acknowledge the experience of it, but not the reality of it. By reality, I don't mean that we're... Reality and experience need not be, itself, have any independent being or substance. And so if you can understand that the pot has no being apart from the clay, and so actually there's only one thing there, and that the snake has no being apart from the rope, there's only one thing there in reality, even though we have that experience. Then we can say, as we unfold all of this, that there's only one non-dual being here as the Adhishtana, the very Adhishtana. There is no second thing, even though we experience all of this. And even though it has, within the experience of the universe, it has an objective reality, we have science and so many things, that complex, orderly, organized, infinitely meaningful experience from within itself does not stand free from its Adhishtana, from its being. And because it does not stand free, it has that it is independent on something other than itself, it is non-dual, it is not away from me. That's where how we have to understand Advaita. Advaita, non-duality, doesn't negate my experience. How could it? That would be really weird. If say you feel that way, or say if you have that particular notion, you know what you would have to do? it's complicated in a way, but just to make it very simple, you would have to go into a meditative state there, a meditative state wherein the universe is no longer experienced. The universe is no longer experienced, and now you've experienced the non-dual nature of the Atma, and you've closed your eyes to the experience of the world. So it's a false non-duality. Because we can have like a samadhi experience where I go into meditation and I'm just simply with myself. You know, like if I turn my mind only toward myself, and myself is non-dual within itself, just as conscious being, and I've turned my mind away from the sense organs and I'm just being with myself, at that time, I'm not having an experience of the world, right? Because my sense organs and my mind are not directed toward the world. So I've turned my mind away, and now I'm just having an experience of the Adhishtana, of non-dual conscious being, which is me. And I'm not having an experience of the world. So now I can say, so I am non-dual. I recognize, because I have that sakshat, I have that direct, immediate recognition of my own being, as non-dual, I have no parts. There is nothing but me in that experience. It's not that I go into just being with myself, and there's all these little people in there, you know, all kinds of little activities in there. So, you know, it's just simply my own simple being. So I've turned myself away from the universe. And then I can say, I am non-dual from within myself. But I'm not non-dual in reference to the universe, because then there's myself, just pure conscious me, conscious being, that within myself there's no duality. But then there's this universe that is full of duality, right? So this universe is a manifestation of infinite duality. And then that manifestation of infinite duality is different from me, right? There's me, non-dual me, and then infinitely dual universe. You see that problem? Non-dual me and infinitely dual universe. That's two. There's the non-dual me and then the dual universe. That's not non-dual. That's not one without a second. Now there's non-dual me and dual universe. That's not what we mean by non-duality. By non-duality, we mean there is only one. And that means for there to be only one, this universe has to have for its essential being, me. Now, why do I say me? That's interesting. If I say that this whole universe only has me for its essential being, the me is the self, that conscious being that cannot be objectified. This body, mind, sense organs, see if we think this is a whole universe. Does this whole universe, does it include me, this body, mind, sense organs, or not? Like if you have a dream and you're identified with a dream character, the dream character is included in the dream, right? It's part of the dream. And so that's not the me that we can be talking about. That me, whatever can be objectified, is something that's included in the dream, and this me, this body, mind, sense organs that I take to be me, is included in the universe. Like I can say, all of you are included in the universe because I see you, I experience you. So you're all part of this universe. Of course, I'm not. No, I recognize myself too, because this body is objectified. All of my thoughts are objectified, my emotions, my sense organs, my sense perceptions, even the I am doing such and such, all is objectified. If you're having a dream and that you as a dream character, you're looking around and you're talking to people, and you're thinking about this and feeling that, and you're saying, I'm going to go to the store and, you know, I'm feeling tired, I think I'll take a nap. You're saying all of these things, right? That's this body, mind, sense organs talking, which is part of the visual, it's part of the universe, right? And just like this universe that I'm perceiving now, perceiving all of you in this room, right? I'm perceiving it, I'm also perceiving this body. and you also are perceiving everyone in the room, and you're perceiving your own body. And subjectively, because this isn't shared by all of us, but all of us are also perceiving our own thoughts. These are called pratibhasika. Means all of the thoughts and experiences that you are having that are not shared. Our bodies are, perception of our body is shared. I see mine and you see it too, right? But I also perceive, each one of us individually perceives all of the thoughts in our mind, all of our emotions, all of our feelings, even doing unconscious work, going in and having conversations with the little ones inside, all of our memories, you know, all of our irritations, all of those things are also perceived, right? And continually changing. I have this thought, and then I have this thought, and I have this thought, I have this feeling, I have this feeling. All of them are perceived. They're all known. And they all come and go. Just like externally, I perceive the vishwa, and all of it is changing. If I look over here, I have this vritti, thought modification. If I look here, I have this. If I wait a couple of seconds, everything will be different. Everything's in continual flux. Right? That's how it is. That's I as the perceiver of this universe. But also, internally, every thought, every feeling, every mood, every emotion, right? I'm the perceiver. These are objectified, and they come and go in me. Right? So, I, the Ajnani's I, the one who does not yet have self-knowledge, this I is not the self of the universe. This body is not the self of the universe. This body, you know, this body is known. It belongs to the universe. It's part of the universe. My sense organs are known. They're part of the universe. They belong to the universe. Because why? Vishwam, the universe, means all that can be known, all everything that can be objectified. And vivida vishwam. Vivida means it's many and varied. Anything that can exist within time and space and time itself, space itself, anything objectifiable is the universe. So now look at your situation. What is objectifiable? Well, everything external to my body. My body is known to me. My sense organs, whether they're working or not, they're known to me. They're objectifiable. My breath is objectifable. My moods, my emotions, my anger, the whole spectrum of my emotional life is objectifiable. You certainly say, no, I'm so irritated, or I'm so happy, or I'm so sad. Yeah. How do you know you're sad? What? I know how I feel. I know. So all of these are objectifiable. Even the I thought, I am doing this, you're aware. Right? And all of these are continually changing. This continually changing, objectified world is the Vishwa. It includes everything that you've taken to belong to be you. Right? It's the same, think now, as in the verse, the dream. You have a dream, you're a dream character in the dream. You are experiencing the dream from within the dream through the eyes of, and ears and sense organs of the dream character. The dream character has its thoughts and moods and emotions. It has its hopes and dreams. It has its relationships. So all of those, from the standpoint of you as the dream character, you know, that is me. That is me. I am the subject of my experience of the dream world. And that's true. It's true that you are the subject of your experience of the dream world. You experience it through your sense organs and through your mind, right? And all of those are located in your body, you know? And all of those enjoy me, conscious being. So why would not that dream character say, I am the conscious being, I am me. I am me making my way through the dream. That's normal, natural. It's kind of made that way, you know? But in reality, as we analyze the situation of the dream, you realize that the dream, that dream character in the dream, is actually belongs to the dream. Belongs to the dream. and that in fact the whole dream rests in you. Right? You know that when you wake up, unless you have a dream guru come into the dream and teach you, you know, you realize the truth of it when you wake up, that I was not only the dream character I was identified with, I was all of my friends, and I was the trees and the animals and the sun and the stars. I was everything. Everything I experienced. I, in fact, was the whole dream. I wasn't just the dream character within the dream. I was the entire dream and everything in it, right? So I realized that dream came from me, was sustained by me, a different me, not the dream character. The truth of the dream character. The truth of the dream character was really the truth of the whole dream. And when I wake up, I have that moment of that extraordinary moment when you wake up from a dream that was so real. You know, you have these dreams that you're totally engaged in, and it's so real. You wake up from that dream, and all of a sudden the whole dream, including your dream body, the whole thing is gone. And nothing has happened. That is an extraordinary understanding, to recognize that reality in terms of the dream at the moment of waking up, that recognition that this whole dream has exploded in my face. It hasn't even exploded, it's just boom, it's gone. It's gone, and nothing has happened to me. I was that dream character. Nothing has happened to me. Nothing has happened at all to anybody. Everything is still exactly the same. And it's still exactly the same without the name and form. It is exactly the same. I am exactly the same without the nama rupa, without the name and form. Because I am the adhishtana. I am the adhishtana of the dream. When we say adhishtana, it means I am what is actually there. I am what is actually there. Like if the snake magically disappears because all of a sudden you wake up and you say it's not a snake, you know. Nothing has happened. Right? Once you make that transition from snake to rope, nothing has happened. At all. When you wake up from the dream, nothing has happened. At all. There's no death experience. All those people died. In the dream, boom, they were all, you know, disappeared. You disappeared. But nothing at all has happened. That's the relationship between what we call mithya, that which is it being experienced, but has a 100% dependence on what actually is. When the mithya, what is classified as mithya, disappears, nothing happens. Because what actually is not touched by it, right? So the rope, the snake disappears, nothing happens. We make the clay, the pot into a clay, we destroyed the, make the pot into a plate, we've destroyed the poor pot, it's gone. Nothing has happened to the clay. Beingness. The clay being has not, nothing has happened. Same if you think of the ocean, it's another example that we use. So many waves, all multi and varied. Some waves are coming into being, going out of being, right? But nothing has happened to what is actually there. So that's this satya-mitya relationship. So he's using the dream analogy here in this verse. What he says is the vishwam, this whole universe that we experience, which includes my body, my mind, my sense organs, anything I can have a subject-object relationship, anything and everything, every emotion, every thought, every duality, internally and externally, that can be experienced, all of that belongs to the Vishwa, to the universe. Whatever can be experienced by me, subject-object, whatever can be objectified, you know. So this whole Vishwa is actually, it's like a city which is being seen in a mirror, you know. Like if I hold up the mirror and I'm reflecting the city, and you see that whole city in the mirror, but if you turn the mirror like this, then that city has gone away, right? And nothing has happened. See what I mean? Now I have the mirror, this, and it's reflecting all of you. So there's this wonderful experience in the mirror. There's an experience in the mirror, right? But now if I take the mirror and I go like this, now there's a new experience in the mirror, and the other experience of the mirror is just gone. But nothing has happened at all, right? Nothing has happened because the adhishtana there is the mirror. Right? So here, in all of my experience, without exception, any objectifiable experience, the experiences can be loaded, very colorful, very emotional, very traumatic, very fun. They can be anything. Anything that the universe can give us, those experiences are coming and going, coming and going, coming and going, without exception. We try to think of, is there any experience that is staying? Have I ever had an experience that stayed? There's only one. And that experience is not objectifiable. That experience is me. Is this my self-evident being? That experience doesn't go away. We don't call it an experience usually because we call experiences things that I experience, things that come and go, that I experience, that I can objectify. We call those experiences. But you know, because I'm an experience too. It's just I don't come and go. I'm the adhishtana. I'm the underlying truth or experience that is there, the constant, the me that is constant in all experience. Nothing ever happens to me. You can see that with this mirror example. You can see that with the snake. You can see that with the pot and the clay, you know. You can see that with the dream. Now we have to see it, the truth of it, in the waking state, here and now. That all of these experiences are mithya, all of them, without exception. The experiences come and go, whether they're here or not here. Nothing happens to me. I am their adhishtana. Adhishtana means I am what is actually here. The mithya snake doesn't touch the adhishtana rope. No matter how scary it is, or no matter how people are reacting to it, from the standpoint of the rope, there's just simply nothing is happening. From the rope, there is not even a snake. For me, right now, this is what we'll be working on this in meditation. Your being, like each one of you, as we worked a little bit on it today in the meditation, each one has a sense of me. It's your sense of self, of me, is fundamental to you. All your experiences come and go. See, listen to the language. All of your experiences come and go. We don't say, and you come and go also. That's not true. All of your experiences come and go, except for you, the adhishtana, the one who is ever-present to every experience, timelessly ever-present. I am always here. So I am the adhishtana for all experiences that I have, without exception. You're not going to have an experience that you are absent from, right? And we have what's called this pratyabhijna. It's a type of memory where if I go back into my past, for every event, I was there. You know, that was my experience. That was my experience. That was my experience. That all these experiences replace one another, right? But I was there for all of them. I'm never replaced. I was here a minute ago and 5 minutes ago and 10 minutes ago and 10 years ago. Every experience you remember, yes, I was there, I was there, I was there. You can't say that about any experience you have. Right? Each experience is replaced by the other. You can recall them through memory. But when that experience was there, this one wasn't there. Right? You had this experience, but then later you had this experience, and then later you had this experience, and way before you had this experience. They're not there simultaneously. Right? Like, what if they were? That would be a mess. You know, all experiences there simultaneously. Not true. You are the one who is ever present to every experience. And we have to recognize that. Because that's the truth. These experiences are not you. They're mitya. They depend upon you, but they have no independent being, right? And they don't touch you. Right? If they touched you, then your being would be kind of molded and transformed by this experience and then wrapped around by this one and this changed by this one. And whoever's here now wasn't the one that was here before. That's not the case. All of these experiences are objectifiable like the dream. They come into being and go out of being. You don't. And so you can't say. You can say you have these experiences and they're intense and whatever you want to say, and you know, your mind reacts in this way and this hurt and whatever, all of the things that we go through in life. That's fine, that's true. But I am not touched by those. I am there as the adhishtana of those experiences. I am a different order of reality. These things come into being and go out of being. I don't come into being and go out of being. I'm not touched by them. I'm what they call asanga. Asanga means nothing touches me. Space is asanga. For an objectifiable example, space. I can't cut space. I can't wet space. I can't tear space. You know, none of the elements can be exist in space, but they don't touch it. You know, you can make the air smoky, but the smoke doesn't penetrate the space. You know. So, space is an example that we use for asanga. So, I objectify space. So, if space itself is our most subtle element, is asanga, means nothing can hurt me or touch me or change me. I pervade everything, but I'm more subtle than everything. Like that, my being, this me, this very personal me, is asanga. I'm always the same. That's why I'm such a wonderful refuge. Nothing happens to me. But now, I have to be able to recognize myself amidst all of these experiences. It's though all these experiences are resting in me, because of this body, mind, sense organs, I take myself to be resting in these experiences. Right? As this body, mind, sense organs that enjoys me as a conscious being. But this body, mind, sense organs is resting here in this room, right? So I take myself to be in the experiences, not all of the experiences in me. So here, he says, so just as in sleep, right, this whole universe appears to be outside of me. It appears as though outside because of Maya. Now, let me say one thing here. He uses the word nidra. Nidra means sleep, okay? Sleep we use as a word for ignorance, for ajnanam. And so when I go to sleep at night, at that time, just try to remember your experience here, if we break it down. I go to sleep at night, and at that time I have no experience of the world, no experience of myself in the sense that I'm commenting, oh, you're asleep, you know, or whatever. Now you're sleeping deeply. The mind is just in totally unmanifest condition where I don't know anything. That's how we talk about sleep. I don't know anything at that time. There's no dream or anything. From that total condition of total ignorance, the dream comes. Okay? The dream manifests. So now, that manifest dream, I'm a character in that dream, and while I'm in that dream, I'm just encased in the dual experience of the dream, where I'm the subject of the dream objects or the object, you know. Just like in the waking state here, if I have self-ignorance, because self-ignorance is viewed as beginningless, And from the Shastra, from the Upanishads, they look at the creation coming into manifestation, being sustained, growing, resolving from beginningless time. They look at the creation as cyclical, very much like you with your dream. You go to sleep, the dream comes, is sustained and resolves into you. Another dream comes, is sustained and resolves into you. They look at the whole creation like that. And from the standpoint of Brahman, or from the standpoint of Ishvara, there is no Ajnanam. There's just, like if I ask you right now, to see what we mean to have no ignorance, if I ask you right now, just imagine a beautiful scene. Okay? There's no ignorance. You're using your maya, just simply using your maya to imagine a scene. Like say if I say, imagine a beautiful forest, you know, or imagine a beautiful sunset. As soon as I say that, because you have that knowledge in abiding in unmanifest condition, as soon as I say, imagine a beautiful sunset, it becomes manifest. Now you have that vision. But you don't, and say if I say now, imagine a beautiful sunset along the beach in the ocean, and you are taking a walk there. Okay, you're taking a walk on the beach, enjoying the ocean and the sunset. Okay, so now you're taking a walk on the beach, enjoying the sunset. But there's no ignorance there. You don't all of a sudden become the person who's taking the walk, right? If you do, if say you're having this imagination, now this is just like Ishvara, you're having this imagination, there's no jnanam at all. There's no ignorance. It's your shakti. It's your maya shakti that is imagining this beautiful scene. And you've imagined yourself taking a walk and all of this, and you can put friends there. But all of it is your maya shakti, right? And you're awake to that. But what if it's a dream where there's a beautiful... it's not you imagining it, right? It's a dream. If it's a dream, that dream is coming, unless it's a lucid dream, it's coming out of self-ignorance. And now, the sunset and the beach and the waves and the ocean, and you within it, you know, are all real. You are that individual. You don't recognize that the individual and the sunset and the ocean and the beautiful, you know, waves, that all of it really are just maya. It's just maya. It's all your maya shakti. You don't know that because the dream is coming out of self-ignorance. So that's the difference between you and Ishvara. Right? For Ishvara, there's no jnanam. The whole creation is like a display of infinite knowledge with no jnanam. There's no identification with anything in it. I remain the Asanga Atma. I remain myself. And this whole creation is an infinite display, you know, of the Maya Shakti. But for all of the jivas, all of the individuals within the creation, when you find yourself in this creation, then you look around through your sense organs and you feel yourself as a conscious being, right, who is in the form of this body, mind, sense organs, and you're experiencing the world. That's your reality. Until somebody holds up a mirror to your being so that you can recognize, I'm really I am the one from whom this whole dream has come. I am the one from whom this whole creation has come. That requires a pramana. That's the Vedanta pramana. That has to, for the teacher, has to hold up, utilize the Upanishads as a pramana, as a means of knowledge to all of a sudden make you see. What he says is, this whole world, because of maya, appears as though outside of me. Right? Here I am and here you are. The whole world, the subject-object relationship is there. So he says, then, so seeing this whole world outside of me, which actually exists inside of me, right? I see it as outside of me. It actually exists inside of me. Like a mirror, like a city in a mirror. Then he says, the one who, sakshat kurut yaha, the one who, sakshat kurute, Sakshat means, when something is sakshat, it means it's right in front of me. Sometimes it's used when you're doing a ritual and you're making offerings into Agni, into the fire. Agni is the devata, okay? You're doing a ritual and you're offering the havis, the offering into the Agni devata. And Agni is right there, receiving that offering. So we say Agni is sakshat because it's right there, seen by me. So now here what has to be sakshat is myself. I have to recognize the truth of this, sakshat kurute. So the one who directly recognizes, not as an object, because I'm not an object, so recognizes my own nature, recognizes this mithya, adhishtana relationship between all of my experience. The one who sakshat kurute directly recognizes that, prabodha samaye, at the time of waking up. Prabodha, this word prabodha has two meanings. It means to wake up like from a dream. It also means to wake up from ignorance. So prabodha comes from bud, to know. So at the time of gaining knowledge, or for the dreamer, you know, at the time of waking up for the dream, so that's why this is such a good use of the word. So he who directly recognizes at the time of waking up from the dream, what does he recognize? That myself, swatmanam, swa-atmanam, he recognizes that my own self alone, eva, atma means the self, swa, my own being, my own self, eva indeed is advayam, is non-dual. Non-dual means satyam mithya. I am the self of all of this. There is no other. There is no other. I am the adhishtana of every experience that I have. And I recognize the truth of that, not just in my head as a note-taking lesson. I recognize my being, the self that I am, is the adhishtana. I am the one who is changelessly always here, and there is no experience away from me. So he says, he who, the one who sees that, sakshat, directly recognize, I see it, I see myself, I see the truth of it, sakshat kurute, that all of this is nothing but my being, myself. I alone am. I am the very adhishtana of all of this. Then to him, he says, namaha idam, this namaha, my salutations. My salutations, he says, to that one who is the Lord Dakshinamurti, Dakshinamurtaye, who now is in the form of my guru, Sri Guru Murtiye. My salutations to Lord Dakshinamurti, who is my guru, who is my guru now. Because of the Sampradaya, why you can say that? Because whatever Dakshinamurti is teaching is what your guru is teaching. If they're within the Sampradaya, we look at that Sampradaya, that teaching methodology, as one candle flame lighting another, lighting another, lighting another. And the knowledge which is given is exactly the same, and the self which you recognize yourself is exactly the same. The self which is Dakshinamurti is the self which is your guru, is the self which is you, is the self which is Ishwara, is the self which is all beings. Right? So he says, the one who, to that one who has recognized at the time of teaching that there is only one, this one self alone, to him, to that one, that one who is the Lord Dakshinamurti in the form now of my guru, I give my namaskars, I give my salutations to that one, right? The jnani, the one who has recognized this, and it's only the one who has recognized it that can pass it on. How can it be passed on? If you know, then you can pass it on. So my salutations to the one who is directly recognizing this and is now teaching me. That one is not different from Dakshinamurti. See, it's beautiful. So we'll do a little bit more of this in the morning and go into the next verse. Okay.
Om Purnamadam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.